People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that American Family Insurance agents can help build a customized renter's policy so you can protect stuff like this, or this, or even this. Case in point. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Welcome, my good people. Welcome to the CJ Moneyway Show. Hey, today I got a guest, the author of As Large As Your Spirit, A Born Explorer. Hey, and he also worked on the London Airlines as an attendant. Hey, I got my man Joel David Bond on the Moneyway Show. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing real good. Thanks for having me on today.
All right, no problem. So before we get started, man, is it anything that you would like to share with us today? Any projects that you have going on that we can look forward to checking out?
Obviously the big project that's out there already is my book, As Large As Your Spirit. Mm-hmm. And I'm currently working on a second project about my evacuation out of Iraq this last year. So that one hopefully will come out in the next year or so. It's kind of the biggest project I'm working on. And but for now, sort of doing some little things in between and just keeping things moving and, you know, just living one day at a time while I can.
So. Yeah. I know, you know, when you're working on certain things and certain projects, man, it takes up a lot of your time because like one project and one thing that you're working on can move to something else. And then you have ideas that spin off to this. And so my thing is, Joel, as I was telling another guest once before, I heard this, it say that you got to have pockets, you know, different type of pockets, because you got to put things in different places, you know, because if I take this idea that I got working on this project, then I get an idea and I try to put it here, it may not fit. But if I have different pockets, I say, you know what? This idea can go with this project right here. It fits better. So, yeah, man, I wish you good luck on your second project. And if everything is everything, then come back on the Moneyway Show and tell us about that, man. I really appreciate it. So I was reading where it say that you stayed in Iraq and that you stayed there by choice. So can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, so I ended up moving to Iraq in late 2016 to take up a position at a private international school over there. And, you know, I say I lived there I chose to move there by choice. I actually moved there almost by accident and then stayed by choice.
Okay. Okay.
At the time, I had been living in London. I had just finished my stint as a flight attendant with British Airways. Was looking for new work someplace in the world and wasn't really quite sure what to do. And at the time, I had registered on a lot of these websites to be an English teacher in different places because I really just had a certificate in TESOL at that point in time. And ended up getting this email, I think it was in my spam box actually one day. And it was for this teaching position, which what I thought when I read it, I thought it was based in Turkey, you know, and I'd been to Turkey a lot and I, you know, had a really phenomenal salary for that part of the world. And I was like, oh, this sounds great. kind of applied to it without reading the small print. Yeah. And the principal got back to me with a Skype call within 24 hours and was like, oh, we're so excited. You want to come and live in Iraq?
Okay, so that was the accident, huh?
Yes, I'm really interested in about, you know, moving there. But, you know, I did my due diligence at the time and figured out, you know, what was safe, what was not, where to go, you know, learned all about as much as I could before arriving, and showed up on the ground and just fell in love with it. You know, I thought I would maybe stay for 2 months and disappear if it was going to be terrible. And I stayed for 7 years before I was actually then forced to leave due to the situation over there. So it was really just a phenomenal experience to delve into that culture and that country and the history and the people that were there. And it's actually with a lot of heartache that I tell that I had to leave because of conflict, because, you know, it reinforces a negative stereotype. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my life there was incredibly safe and the people were the most hospitable I'd ever met. And, you know, and my situation was a little bit unique in having to leave, but, you know, really it's just a phenomenal country. And I, you know, I'm so sad that I had to leave in the end, but 7 years of my life in Iraq was fantastic. And I really recommend people take a chance to visit if they have the opportunity.
Oh man, that's cool. You know, I guess, as they say, that sometimes, God has a different plan for us than what we have. And so, like you say, you know, like I wasn't intending on, I thought it was in Turkey, but it was in Iraq. And, you know, I didn't know that I was going to go there, but this is where he placed you at. And it's cool that, you know, you enjoyed it and, you know, you took in the community and they took you in. So, I think that's cool, man. That's real cool. Flight attendant, man. I didn't have that as a question, but I got to ask. How is that experience just flying around the world once, twice a week, man? Like how is that? And what is any, have you ever came across any situations while in the air? Because when I'm flying, man, that's sometimes the most, the thing that, that makes the heart pump.
Oh, man. You know, CJ, I spent 2 years in the air with British Airways, and it was, I tell people, it was the worst job with the best you know, because you got to be paid, basically, to go all these amazing places, but you actually never really got to see anything.
Oh.
So, you know, I'd fly off to, well, I remember, you know, I had housemates at the time in London, and I'd, you know, wheel my bag out the front door, and I'd yell off my shoulder, hey, I'm just going to get pizza in Italy. See you tomorrow. You know. And it would be kind of the joke that I would get to go and do these amazing things. But, you know, the reality is on short haul flights, you'd never leave the airplane, to be honest. You just go there and back. And on long haul flights, you're so jet lagged that even if you have 24 hours to explore, you know, you're in a different time zone. It's 2 a.m. And the only thing they do is, you know, order sushi off the room service menu in Tokyo.
Mm.
You know, you're kind of at a loss of really being able to explore the world. And so it really wasn't as glamorous as people make it out to be. I mean, it was fun and there were elements, you know, it was, I tell people it's cumulative tourism. You know, you get on your schedule one day that you're going to, you know, to Nairobi. And so it's like, oh, great. You know, I get to go see the giraffe sanctuary. And then 3 months later, you get another trip to Nairobi and you've got enough waking hours and energy to go see the elephant park, you know, and maybe 6 months later, you know, you're there again and you're like, oh, there's a really cool bazaar I wanted to see. Go buy this fresh coffee, you know. And after about 2 years, you're like, I guess I've been to Kenya, but it doesn't feel like I've been there because it was just like an hour here, 4 hours there, you know, 30-minute trip to the bazaar here. And it just didn't, you know, it didn't feel like you really got to travel. You know, but in the air, of course, you know, it's a lot of it's customer service. So the actual job itself.
Yeah.
You know, I found myself, oh, man, you know, people just leave their brains in their checked luggage. You know, I never really had any major security issues in the air. Personally, I have colleagues that I worked with. They had passengers die flight. There's a baby born almost once a month somewhere on an airline in the world.
Wow.
And there's always minor incidents. You know, I had in probably the biggest incident in air I had was a passenger who was drunk and got up in the middle of the night, was going to go, thought he was going to the toilet and instead just stood in the middle of the aisle and just peed all over the floor.
Wow.
And there's this like 8-year-old boy who was right on the aisle, peed all over this kid as well. Parents were super upset.
I know so they were.
Up a fight, basically. I got arrested when we landed.
Yeah, I'd be ready to fight too. Somebody pee on my child. So, on me too. But yeah, man, you're a better man than me, Joel, man, because, I can't get in the air that much and fly that many times a week or whatnot, man. I mean, once every now and then to Vegas or here and there. But so talk to us about your book that you was talking about, As Large as Your Spirit. So what does this book entail?
Yeah, so the premise of the book, the backdrop really is quarantine in 2020 when the pandemic hit. Everybody has got a quarantine story of some sort, and what happened to that. Mine ended up being just incredibly unique because I was living in the Middle East at the time and had left just before the pandemic to go on a one-week vacation in Greece. I had this really sort of intense lifestyle in Iraq, and I'm working on a master's degree at the time. And, it was just, there was a lot of going on in the world at that point. And so I decided to sort of take a week off of work and just downshift, go slightly disconnected. I wanted to go off-grid a little bit. And so I found myself a less touristed Greek island to just take a break on. And I went with a carry-on bag thinking I was going to be there for a week. And the day I arrived, the Global Health Organization used the words global pandemic and everything shut down. And what was going to be a one-week vacation turned into 5 months of quarantine on this Greek island, which was my carry-on bag.
Wow.
And, of course, at the time, you had no idea that it was going to be 5 months. It was just, another 2 weeks. This isn't over yet. Stay another two, and so it just kept dragging on and on. Midway through my time there, I discovered a refugee camp on the island filled with refugees from the Middle East, Afghanistan, Iran, Syria, all these places that I had been and visited and lived. And so the premise of the book really is here I am, a man from the West, caught in Greece, trying to get back to my home in the Middle East, now intersecting paths with all these refugees from the Middle East, caught in Greece, trying to get to the West. And so our paths crossed. I ended up volunteering to teach English for a while, and our lives on both sides of that equation changed dramatically afterwards. And so the book is really that tale about trying to return home in the sense of trying to get back to Iraq, but also really trying to find a space to call home in your own spirit, and mirrors that of the journeys with refugees and their search for integration into a new society. But what does it really mean to find a place to call home in your own heart? What does it mean to really listen to that still small divine voice inside you to know your true calling in life? And so As Large as Your Spirit is that story. It's that universal connection to your inner humanity and knowing yourself. And what does it mean to really find a place to call home?
Yeah, that's heavy right there, to be thinking that you're going somewhere for a week, then wind up, like just the unknowing. You know what I'm saying? Like the unknowing, it can become frustrating. It can become, anxiety. You know what I'm saying? Like not knowing when I'm getting back to, Iraq or getting back here or whatever. Then, like you say, you have to adapt. And now it's a whole different type of culture. But then again, he placed you somewhere at that time that you needed to be, So I guess my question is, so with these experiences that you had being evacuated, going here, and so all these experiences you started teaching, and so what was the real motivation, the inspiration for you to sit back, take these thoughts, and then make it into a book?
The real spark, the flashpoint for me, happened much later after I turned to Iraq from Greece, because I'd had all these experiences. And of course, it takes time to process and filter what you've done. But it was maybe a year after I returned when I remembered a moment of walking into this monastery in mainland Greece, right before I had gone to the island. I did some touring on mainland Greece and walked into this monastery and interacted with this monk who was about my age, young guy, fully dressed in sort of, you know, Orthodox Greek religious robes, and he was repairing a TV set in the middle of this monastery, this ancient monastery. You know? And I'm like, this just doesn't equate for me. Like, I'm not, like, I've got this monk in this ancient monastery, like, doing technical engineering work to repair a TV set. I was like, what? And so I started talking with him and found out that he had formerly worked as a border guard on the boats in the Ionian and the Aegean Sea there, and would either turn back boats of refugees or take them into the Greek islands for processing all the refugee centers there. And he had a dream one night where Jesus came to him on the water and told him to become a monk.
Mm.
And so he had a literal dream and literally followed it, quit his job the next day and moved to mainland Greece and became a monk. And he'd been trained as an engineer. And so his thing was basically to repair electronics, you know, as kind of his act of service to the local community. But it really struck me only much later that this gentleman, who was a monk in this monastery, had formerly lived and worked on Samos Island, where I had been quarantined. And it's very probable that he had actually detained some of the very same refugees that I eventually taught English to help process them through that system out into asylum and refugee status into Europe. And it struck me as such a full circle, like such an incredible moment where the work that, you know, I had sort of accidentally found myself doing was a sort of completion of some of these people's stories and their lives. And so once that sort of clicked for me in my brain of how that had all fit together, I was like, I have to share this. Like, there's no way I can't tell this story, because it just gave me goosebumps the moment I realized that.
Yeah.
So that was the spark point for me. It took me about a year to actually write and publish. I'm super pleased with it, and it's recently just been finalized. Didn't win, but it got into the top four tier category of the Best Independent Book Awards.
Congratulations, man. So hopefully, you know, it's going to hit number one. So what is it looking like on the charts, you know, as far as Amazon and things of that nature? Are we looking at a bestseller on Amazon or New York Times or? We're going to speak it into existence then. It was something you said, man, that kind of triggered me too. And it's funny that you brought that up, because, you know, as we just went through Easter Resurrection weekend last week, and so we had something at our church and that Friday, on Good Friday. And so I had to speak. And as I spoke, one of the things that my scripture was on thirst, you know, when he said, you know, I thirst. And so what you just said was you said that the monk said that he had a dream that Jesus was walking on water and he began talking to him. And then, you know, I guess you just confirmed something to me, because as I told them that day, in my dream, that I had a dream where Jesus was walking on water, and the spirit told me in my dream to go back and read when Peter got out of the boat and started walking towards Jesus, right? And so as I was explaining it to them, and as I went back and, you know, I didn't probably read it the day that I woke up, but out of obedience, I did go back and read it. You know, when he fed the multitude of 5,000 and he sent them on, and he sent the disciples on the boat. And then, you know, the winds was boisterous and beating up on the boat. And then Jesus saw him from the shore, and then he began walking on water. Then Peter, you know, they was afraid. And Peter said, Lord, is it you? And then he said, yeah. He said, well, can I come? And he told him to walk, you know, saying, he said, come. And say, boat, Peter started walking on water. But then he, you know, took his eyes off Jesus and he started drowning. But my point is that, Joel, that when you said that, it made me think about my experience, and what was revealed to me, too, is that we need to thirst after something, because if we thirst after the Lord, if we thirst after Jesus, and we want to be in the facility, because Peter, as we know, Peter was tenacious. You know what I'm saying? He wanted to be in the presence, you know, like, hey, wherever you at, I want to be. And so I
that moment in scripture, that's just a phenomenal story to me as well. Just that
it is
the faith it took for Peter to step out, you know, just.
Come on, Joe. And I know you know more than me. You know, I've been on cruises. You know, we've been on cruises from Miami to the Bahamas. We've been on two. We just went on one last year. And so, you know, the body of water that you see when you're on a cruise, or, you know, you've been to places where I know you've seen beautiful, you know, say oceans and, you know, the sea and things like that, or flying over stuff and seeing all this body of water. And just to imagine walking on something like that, or when you're on a cruise and you know how dark it is out there in the cruise, and say like if you was on the boat and something walking on water towards you, you know, it's just that you have to, as my pastor say, as I said that day, some things in life you have to use your spiritual imagination, because some things in the natural you just not gonna understand, or it's not gonna be revealed to you. But I'm glad you brought that up, man. That made me think about that situation, and it's making me think more as to why he wanted me to go back and see that, as you said, with the monk, man. So I appreciate you for sharing that. So I guess that takes away my next question, because my next question was gonna be what was, you know, the impact from the situation, but you said that was one that actually stuck in your mind and that got you to start reading. So I guess my next question would be like, how did this experience and this change the outlook? How did it change your outlook of life?
You know, I think what it helped me do is to empathize more with people who are really struggling or in a different life situation than me. It gave me an opportunity to really put myself in the shoes of people who are in much worse, much more tragic situations, but also understand the resilience of the human spirit and like how tenacious we can be, how much we really want to just like push forward and that drive that we have. And, you know, you're just talking about, you know, Peter in the boat and stepping out, the storm and the wind and the waves. And it made me remember actually some of the stories that I heard of my refugee students who had been on these tiny boats across the Aegean Sea from Turkey to Greece in the middle of the night, and how the journey itself across open water on a good day with navigation should only take about 45 minutes to an hour. And a lot of these refugees would get stranded and lost in these rubber dinghies in the middle of the night on the Aegean Sea for 12 hours until daylight would hit again, and they'd try to reorient and navigate their way to these Greek islands. And just the amount of determination, the amount of drive that you have, possibly motivated by fear to begin with. You can't go back to where you came from because of war, conflict, politics, identity, religion, whatever it might be. You know, you've been driven out of your home country. And so you're compelled to pay a human trafficker, drop thousands of dollars to somebody to help get you onto these boats with no guarantee you're going to make it to the other side, and then be lost in the middle of these oceans and the waves and no guarantee of even life. Like you know that there's a risk of death going into this, and you still choose to do it. And I think, you know, to me, that whole experience of working with these refugees just opened my eyes to, one, the depth of motivation that we all have when faced with difficult situations. We can tap into so much to drive us forward and to make change, you know? And that when you have a deep faith, when you have this resounding belief that tomorrow will be better than today, that I can do something to change my life situation, you'll go to any lengths to make sure that happens. And I think it's so easy in our comfortable Western society now, where everything is on our fingertips, you know, all the world's knowledge and information is just
right there, right there in the phone. You know? Yeah.
you know, all of the world's wealth basically is accessible in some way, shape, or form. But if you know how to tap into and just even get a job anywhere, I mean, you know, we've got this access to so many things. And when all that's stripped away, you're left with nothing but your faith to take action and move forward. And I think that's really what I walked away from this whole experience with, is reigniting the motivating power of faith.
Yeah, you know, just listening to you, and like you say, you know, with them going in the water, as we, you know, using our spiritual imagination and just can imagine just being on a big body of water like that in the middle of nowhere. And like you say, don't know if I'm going to get to where I'm going or what's going to happen to me out there or whatnot. And just the resilience that some of them have to just keep moving forward. And for you to experience something like that as a whole, you know, like you say, I believe it can be life changing, and it makes you more appreciative of the things that we do have access to and the things that we're able to do when so many other people have it much, much worse than we do. You know, it's an old saying that say you never know something happy about your hand until you don't have one. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, with the man that got those shoes, got shoes but no feet, you know, so I can't remember how the terminology go, but you know, you just be grateful, man, and thankful for the things you got. And I'm glad that you sharing that with us today, because that can become a lost art in life. You know, we get so caught up in, you know, we got easy access to everything. A wise guy once told me before, we living in a generation where we want everything microwaved, you know.
Gosh, right.
You know,
instant access, instant gratification.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think what the experience really taught me is again, it wasn't this, you know, comparative, like, oh, how much better I have it or how lucky I am. Mm-hmm. Let's be thankful. It was almost like, yes, I do have a lot that I'm thankful for, but I can recognize in this situation here with these refugees how similar my human experience is to them, even though the situation is different. I'm still looking for connection. I'm still looking for a place called home. I'm still looking for love and for security and for connection on a deep level. It doesn't matter whether I'm a refugee lost on a boat in the Aegean Sea or whether I'm a prosperous, you know, international teacher who, you know, happens to be stuck someplace. You know, we still have the same base human emotion experience. Yeah. And that's what it really, I think, brought me to, is this level of empathy. Like, wow, like all it takes is a step of faith to step out of that boat and make that first step of action to create the connection.
Yeah, man, that's heavy, man. I'm glad you brought that up today. So you talked about this still small voice that you speak about. Explain to us what this still small voice represents for you.
You know, I use a lot of religious language in my writing and my work. I come from a Christian background, and so that's the sort of language that I resonate with. But I also recognize that not everybody comes from that same background. And so, you know, for me, I try to keep my perspective really broad so that it appeals to people who are of all faith or none. And so for me, when I talk about the still small voice, I do refer to God. I think of, you know, God as being that still small voice. But oftentimes when I think of God, I actually think of God as an acronym for good, orderly direction, in the sense that there's a way to live and move and breathe in this world that helps us make a positive impact, helps us make a change. And whether you want to ascribe that to a higher being in a traditional religious sense, or whether you want to ascribe that to a sense of purpose or moral value, depending on your background or your faith, you know, I think about God as being a good, orderly direction. And that still small voice inside is listening to that. It's listening to that voice, that inner working, that being able to sit with yourself and know yourself on a really deep level. To me, that's that still small voice. It's that God action inside each and every one of us that it takes practice to be able to do, but is totally life-changing and propels us forward if we're willing to sit and listen to it.
You know, I have a logo as well with the acronym G-O-D, and Mine is given our destiny. Given our destiny. And I agree with you that, you know, because I wrote a book and it was published in 2015, Both Eyes Open and Both Eyes Shut. And as you say, too, I use a lot of I come from a Christian background as well. And I use a lot of scriptures, you know, in my writing. And when I first started writing, I was just writing stories. And then as I began seeking the Lord more, or he began drawing me towards him more, I started writing scriptures down. And so as I went back and started reading the story, you know, going through the story, I'm looking, I'm like, wait a minute, this scripture can go here. And then I was able to elaborate on certain scriptures, but in a form where we can understand it, because as you say, everybody is not, you know what I'm saying, of the same background. Everybody don't understand certain things, you know, or whatnot. And so with that small voice that you're talking about, I can relate to it. And something that you said, if we just sit back and just let it take its course. You know, I just want your thought on this as I, you know, ask you this last question. Just ask your thought on this. A lot of times, the reason that we don't hear this small voice is because we're doing too much. We don't set time, you know what I'm saying, to just cut the radio off while you're driving, you know, or sit in a peaceful place where this small voice can be heard. But if I'm moving all the time, or if I got to listen to music every day because this is my comfort, or I'm not reading the word, you know, in order to get something in me, you know, that's first and foremost. If I don't have nothing in me, I can't relate when I hear the word, you know what I'm saying? Even if the small voice, I believe that it talks to us all the time, but because of a lot of rhetoric that we have within our own lives, we miss it. You know, we miss out on certain things in life, man. So I just want to know your point on that. Like, what is it that one can do, man, to just sit back and just wait on that still voice to lead them and guide them, you know? So,
yeah, no, I think you're so true. Is that we live in a world where we're constantly bombarded by, you know, emails and text messages and, you know, the phone and radio and music and the doorbell ringing and, you know, every sort of, you know, advertisement and television, everything is just coming at us all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, what really happened for me in the pandemic and for a lot of us is that it just turned the volume down on all that noise for a lot of us. And some of us were really frightened by what the noise we heard within ourselves. And some of us were pleasantly surprised and were able to journey with that and to grow. And I think the most resilient people are those who were able to turn, you know, have that volume turned down and to sit with themselves and to work on their own issues, you know, and to sit with that still small voice. And so, you know, I think that's a practice that probably needs to be carried over, you know, more and more, like just taking the time to be with yourself and self-reflect and do the work, on the inside. And like you said, the work can't be done if you don't have anything to work with, you know, if you got the tools that are coming in, if you've got, you know, that still small voice, if you've got your faith background, if you've got scripture that's coming in, if you've got whatever it is that your sort of background, your story is to work with, then you got to sit down and then churn that back out, you know, and push it back out to the world so that you are doing something to help, you know, the people in your community and the world around you to make this kind of place, the world, you know, a kind of world that God would want to show up in, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think that's what we're here to do. You know, we're here to create a world that God would want to show up to and turn the volume down on a lot of that, all that excess noise and go do the work on yourself.
Yeah. And as we end this, David, I would just like to say that as we're on this journey, where we're talking about this spiritual journey as well, is that the Bible says that you got those that sow and those that plant. But he say that neither one of them is nothing because it's God who gives the increase. But with that being said, man, I just pray that you continue sowing or watering, because we don't know which one we're doing, you know, because it could be, we could be the one sowing a seed into somebody, or it's already been a seed that's already been planted and we're just coming to water it, man. So whatever you're doing, man, I just pray that you continue doing what you're doing, man, on this journey, man. And pray that God continue blessing you and showing you and opening your eyes to new things. So tell us, man, about your handles, any where we can find you at, where we can find your book, you know, where we can start following you at on Facebook, YouTube.
Yeah, so I'm everywhere on the internet at Joel David Bond. So my full name, joeldavidbond.com, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Joel David Bond. And my book, As Large As Your Spirit, is on Amazon, available globally. As Large As Your Spirit by Joel David Bond. You'll find it on Amazon there as well.
Okay. So, man, I'm going to start following you today. I ask that you hold on for a second, man, as I get the outro. Hey, I thank you all for listening to the CJ Moneyway Show. Hey, I'm with my man, Joel David Bond. Go pick up the book, As Large As Your Spirit. As he said, you can get it on Amazon. Go to his website. Hey, check out his story. Very interesting story, man. Check out my man, Joel David Bond. Peace.
Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that American Family Insurance agents can help build a customized renter's policy so you can protect stuff like this, or this, or even this. Case in point. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.